Montreal, third year in a row. Thanks, Montreal. You gotta love a Dagwood sandwich.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you?
It's always nice when the league can add another Ivy League educated person to the front office.
Yes, sir. Pretty smart dude, that George Parros.
George is really intelligent. Went to the Del Barton School. I think there are only two NHL players that ever played at Del Barton, which is a prep school in New Jersey. One is George Parros, and I believe the other one is Kenny Agostino, who had a little taste with Calgary and a little taste with Yale. Or, sorry, went to Yale, but with St. Louis. And so that's interesting. But, no, good for George. I know George worked hard at it. He's really good friends with Chris Pronger from their time in Anaheim. And I think that's one of the things that helped get him into this position. So it's good. It's good for him. And he's right on about the slashing stuff. We talked about that ad nauseum last year, didn't we?
Well, and it seems the whole debate went to another level with the Mark Methot injury.
Well, it should have. You know, it was interesting. I was talking to Johnny Gaudreau yesterday, obviously with the Calgary Flames, and he had his finger broken with an innocuous slash from, I believe it was, Mark Stahl in a Minnesota-Calgary game. Really innocuous. And he just said, the guy flicked his stick up just to try to make a play on me. I think that's the mindset, though. A lot like what we used to have with obstruction and hooking and holding. Kind of got that out of the game. Now they kind of have to get the slashing part out of the game, especially the targeting of the hands.
I welcome those criticisms because my argument has been from the beginning that I played the game about as physical as anybody for 9 years and never once got fined or suspended. So it's in our mission statement as a department to keep physicality in the game. That's an important part of the game, and we're not looking to change that at all, but obviously we want to keep a safe environment for all the players there. So
I think that was important to emphasize there with George Parros. Everybody knows what kind of player he was and why he was in the league and why he lasted so long, but he was not a dirty player.
No, my gosh, no. He was never dirty. He was more feared than dirty, and he was never dirty. What's interesting, I think he wrote his baccalaureate thesis at Princeton on the tax implications of having a professional sports franchise in your city, both from hotels, taxis, bars, restaurants, and that stuff, but also taxpayer funding of stadiums. So there was, it was kind of an all-inclusive, if I remember correctly, his thesis was on that kind of stuff. So it's a really cerebral, smart guy.
All right.
He's not gonna take hitting out of the game. It's how he made his living.
So one of the things that's been a constant theme over the last several years is at some point, like a lot of people who love the National Hockey League, whether it's halfway through or two-thirds of the way through, you throw up your hands, you go, I have no idea what to expect and what's a suspension and what's not a suspendable act and all that kind of stuff. If you could offer one piece of advice to George Parros in his new role, what would it be?
A suspension is a suspension is a suspension. If it's a one-gamer, it's a one-gamer at the start of the year and it's a one-gamer at the end of the year. If it's a three-gamer, it's a three-gamer at the beginning of the year, the middle of the year, and the end of the year. Don't alter suspensions. One is good for one, it's good for the other. I mean, this is where I think so many teams and the fans get so frustrated. One player might do something and get two games. Another player from another team will do the exact same thing. He might get no games. Make it consistent.
Since you referenced George Parros and his thesis on economics, there's an economic term known as forward guidance, and it's when the Federal Reserve Bank or the Bank of Canada sets interest rates, and sometimes they'll provide forward guidance so the market and business types can understand what's about to come. Is there any way for the Director of Player Safety, whether it's publicly or privately, to provide some kind of forward guidance so everyone knows what to expect?
Boy, oh boy, Rod, you nailed it. What they should be doing, and I'm sure they will, because I know under Colin Campbell they did it. I think they did it under Stephan Quintal, and they have to do it under George, is you got to go around with videos. Fellas, if you do this, let's just say Exhibit A, if you do this, you're getting three games. If you do that, you're going to get two games. And if you do that, you're going to get one game. So show them different things that have led to suspension over time, but tell them, this is what it's going to be. So absolutely there's going to be forward guidance there. George is smart enough to understand that.
Pierre McGuire wrapping up his first week back every day during the long season at 5:05 on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. Earlier today on the Montreal Forum, in studio for a full hour with Tony Marinaro, Michel Therrien, among the topics tackled, that infamous loss, 10 times that cannon went off in Columbus.
That was the toughest night in my life.
Really?
As a coach. If there is something I regret, it's that night. I know the next morning, because I never talked to players after a game, I sat down with Monty and I apologize. I sat down with Carrie and I apologize. And I sat down with all the group after and I apologize. It was a tough night and we all were shocked.
How about that? As you know, that was a major source of frustration for a lot of people, specifically the two goaltenders. And what he said today. First of all, Pierre, there are a lot of people listening who wonder about that. I never talk to my players after a game. Isn't that more or less standard operating procedure?
Standard operating procedure. Usually you don't address anything because it's such a quick turnaround time for the media to have to get into the room. And you don't want the players, especially if it's an emotional win or an emotional loss, you don't want to drown that emotion away. If it's an emotional win, let them enjoy it. If it's an emotional loss, you talk to them the next day when everybody's a little bit calmer and cooler. So that is standard operating procedure. I don't know why people would take offense to that, because they shouldn't. That's how it is around the league.
Yeah, they're just not aware of that. But it's interesting to hear him talk in that manner, you know.
Well, the one thing I would ask him, and again, I don't know. I talked to Tony this morning, by the way, because he and I, you had brought his name up yesterday, so he and I had a long talk this morning. I'm so happy for his son doing as well as he is in soccer. But, you know, we were talking, and he said, oh, Michel Therrien's coming in today. I said, good, tell him I said hello. I'm really happy, you know, that he's going to get out there and put his message out. It's appropriate. He should. He did some really good things for that team. He did. He did. But why is he apologizing? That's the question I would have asked, and maybe Tony did. What are you apologizing for?
Well, you got a brand new goalie, Al Montoya, who's trying to make an impression in a new team, and you're watching this, and it's like, okay, enough already. Even if the plan originally was to not put Carey Price in there, 10 goals. I mean, that's just, it's a terrible thing for.
Yeah, no, stuff happens. It's a long season. I remember coaching in a game when Tom Watt was running the Toronto Maple Leafs and Grant Fuhr was left, and I think we might have scored 10 or 11. You have to look it up. But he left them in the whole night. He never took them off. We let them. I mean, we had a juggernaut. We just were scoring at will. And Grant Fuhr's in the Hall of Fame. They left him in the whole night. I'm not sure Tom Watt ever apologized for that.
Well, you know, when he came back, the level of conditioning from our players, and when he came back, he was behind. So it's like a kid go to school. You know, if you study all week, you can't wait for the exam on Friday because you're ready. And if you don't study all week, you go to the exam. You say, no. You know, it's like, you know, an athlete needs to be in great shape to be able to perform. I'm going to do some scouting. I'm going to go watch games.
For yourself or
for
a
Montreal,
team?
You know, obviously, you know. So I'm going to go see a game in Florida, Tampa.
For the Canadians?
Obviously, because, you know, they're...
You're still in their contract.
That's right.
All right, so there's a little bit more. Michel Therrien will be scouting this season for the Canadiens, and he was talking specifically about Alex Galchenyuk being a different player after the injury, that he wasn't physically in top shape.
Well, that happens, again, to a lot of players in the league. I'm glad he alluded to that. But that, again, coaches get let go, and they're still under contract. And, listen, you can't get enough information. Doesn't mean you have to use it all, but you can never have enough information, so utilize the assets that you have available. And for a lot of pro scouts, getting to Florida and getting to Tampa, it's pretty expensive for a lot of teams. So you just, if you have somebody down there working, you let them work it out. So that's a good news. But in terms of Galchenyuk, I'm not surprised to hear that.
Does he want to play center? Does he really want to play center?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
He really wants to play center.
Yeah. Yeah, but he wants to play center, but in the meantime, he doesn't mind to play on the wing. He understand the process.
Pierre, translate for us.
He wants to play center because there's way more open ice, but more than anything else, he wants to play in the game. So So if he can't play center, he wants to be in the wing. He just wants to play is basically what Michel's saying there. You know, again, Alex Galchenyuk was drafted for a reason. Just like Louis LeBlanc, if you want me to go back, was drafted for a reason. They fouled him up, and they better not foul Galchenyuk up. So that's part of the problem there.
How did they foul up Louis LeBlanc?
Oh, taking him out of Harvard after his freshman year. That was insanity. Pure insanity. I said it at the time.
Yes, he did.
I said it right at the time, the day they did it. I said, this is insane. What are they doing? The kid just left Montreal to go play in the USHL. Then they're taking him out of an unbelievable environment at Harvard where he's going to get what he needs the most, strength and conditioning, playing in an environment where he's going to play against a lot of top-end guys as a first-line center. And the Canes said, well, if you go back there, we're not going to sign you. What would they do that for?
Louis LeBlanc, and there's a lot of revisionist history because it didn't work out. LeBlanc should have been an effective NHL forward.
Absolutely. Absolutely he should have been. And they rushed the process. I heard Michel Therrien correctly say there's a process. There was no process. Now, to be fair, that took place under another management team. It had nothing to do with Marc Bergevin. It had nothing to do with Michel Therrien. It had nothing to do with the people that are running the team today.
Yeah, but when management did change, he was kind of caught in the middle. And then it becomes a situation, he feels, Louis LeBlanc, I haven't spoken to him about this, where they brought him up, the new management, they gave him 8 games, and he didn't feel that 8 games was enough to show that he can play at the NHL level.
The damage was already done. That's why the day they signed them, you'd have to go through the archives. Rod probably has it. I was like, what are they doing? This is nonsense.
And you were also concerned, if I recall correctly, about the route that Michael McCarron took.
Absolutely. Michael McCarron should have been at Western Michigan playing with Andy Murray. But he got, because Andy Murray's a professional coach working at the college level, and what McCarron needed more than games is he needed more practice time. And college players, and you're going to see, because Tony Granato right now is at Wisconsin, you're going to see a ton of pro players. Luke Cunningham's already signed. You're going to see a ton of pro players coming out of Wisconsin. You're going to see a ton more coming out of a lot of other colleges, because colleges are realizing, let's hire these former pro assistants, bring them in as head coaches, and get them to have those extra 3 or 4 days a week of practice to make these kids better. Now, to be fair, though, to be totally fair, major junior hockey is very good. It's not a little bit good. It's very good. And there are a lot of kids that benefit from playing major junior hockey, like Sidney Crosby, like Connor McDavid, like Connor Brown, like Mitch Marner. You know, you can go down the line. There are a lot, Mark Scheifele. There are tons of guys that belong at that level, too. They don't need it. They don't need college hockey. Louis LeBlanc needed it. He needed it. Michael McCarron needed it. He needed it.
So, like, I understand we're in 2017 now, and it is an immediate gratification world, but is there not, we use the word process to go through, where patience can actually come to the forefront when dealing with a first-round pick?
Rod, you're not old enough to remember this. Larry Robinson actually played in the American Hockey League. Mitch Melnick and I are old enough to remember that. Doug Riseborough did. Doug Jarvis did. The Montreal Canadiens were so great for so long because they had organizational standards that preach patience and development. And if you wanted to rush the process, and Mitch, explain to the fans that don't remember, Guy Lafleur almost got traded out of Montreal.
Guy Lafleur had a pretty good rookie year, but not what people expected because he was replacing Jean Beliveau, basically. And then he struggled in his second year. And his third year, he was starting to look like a bust. And there were serious discussions about moving him, but they kept him, and they signed him to a new deal, and he took his helmet off, and the rest is history.
And you know what else is scary? That was a 20-year-old draft, not an 18-year-old draft.
What about what you're hearing that the NHL would like to go back, maybe not to 20, but to 19?
Very smart. And if they do that, I can assure you that the 01 birth dates and the 02 birth dates, if it ever affected them, and I don't know if it will or not, it would change. There would be so many star players. The 01 birth date and the 02 birth date have so many potential star players in it. It's scary. Both those birth years are insane.
If you try that, though, good luck with the agents and lawyers.
Yeah, no
well,
kidding.
Well, that's going to be the biggest thing. There's going to, in the United States in particular, there'd be a big problem in the courts. You know, you got to go back to the Hayward decision in basketball that opened it up to an 18-year-old draft, and that's, you know, right to work. When you're 18 years old, you have a right to work. And so what would they say in a court of law? I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. But I do know that Spencer Hayward, that was the big decision to get the 18-year-old draft in basketball, and eventually that led to the 18-year-old draft in hockey.
Spencer Hayward. Look him up. Go ahead, Mitch.
Well, Pierre, since we're talking about development and being patient with players, I want to throw something at you. Nikita Sherbak, he's going to be entering his third year pro. He spent 2 years now in the American Hockey League. And I know, looking back at drafts, it's revisionist history. But in your mind, who do you think is going to be a better NHL player? Nikita Sherbak or Josh Hosang?
Why would you ask me that question?
You're so mean.
Because, you're so mean.
Well, they're taking two spots apart.
I know they were. Let's put it this way. Hosang has much more offensive upside than Sherbak. How's that? Is that fair?
That's fair. That's very fair. He also has a little more baggage that I think people are, you know, people are...
Well, there's a reason why he slipped in the draft.
Yeah.
He slipped in the draft because he was probably arrogant, bordering on rude in some of his interviews, and that was a problem. There was a quiet, silky confidence to him that I think probably alienated some directors of player personnel. See, when I go, and I did a lot of them, I don't care about that stuff. I really don't, but a lot of teams do. A lot of teams do.
All right, speaking of arrogance, every successful professional athlete has to have a level of it. They have to have self-belief, confident. You mentioned Johnny Gaudreau before. I'm looking for the quote here. You're talking about the Pacific, right? He said, quote, "You're not looking at the Kings and the Ducks being number one or two anymore. It's Calgary and Edmonton, hopefully. You see the Canadian teams, the playoffs, and the pushes they're making. It's great for the sport." And Mark Scheifele of Winnipeg, this is courtesy of Frank Saravelli at TSN, "I don't want to just be number seven in scoring. I want to be at the top."
I think we talked about Scheifele yesterday. If we didn't, we talked about him the day before. I spent a fair bit of time with him. I think Scheifele could be one of the top 10 scorers in the league. So, no, I'm not surprised by that. Gaudreau is not arrogant at all. He's polite beyond belief. If you saw him in street clothes, you'd think he was a choir boy. He's salt of the earth. I think he might have probably miscalculated in terms of speaking about Anaheim. The Kings aren't what they used to be. The Ducks are still really one of the top teams, and they'll have to deal with them. But there's you know what, Mitch, I got to tell you, the West is going to be tough because the one team, and you guys probably have because you're so plugged in, the Dallas Stars are good, Mitch. The Dallas Stars are good. And they're going to be – I think Tyler Seguin, if he stays healthy, could lead the league in scoring.
Well, he's addressed their lingering issues. They lingered for too long, considering the other talent that he assembled, but he has addressed them, Jim Neal.
Well, the one thing, and I talked with Jamie Benn yesterday and with Tyler Seguin. They were both with me on the ice yesterday. Ben Bishop's going to make a big difference. You know where Bishop's going to make a huge difference for them? Moving the puck. Because of Hitchcock coaching there and because of the style of play they're going to have in the neutral zone, it's going to force a lot of shoot-ins and retrieval situations. And Bishop is so good at skating and handling the puck. That's going to make it really difficult to establish a forecheck on the Dallas Stars. And that's going to overcome some of their weakness on the back end in terms of elite puck-moving guys. But they made one other addition that was huge. Getting Mark Methot, that was a big get because he fits right into what Hitchcock's all about. They're going to be very, very difficult to play against.
Still waiting on Pasternak and the Bruins. Bo Horvat and the Canucks, however, came together today. Six-year deal over $30 million.
Yeah, that's a good – I mean, for the kid, it's unbelievable. Bo is a great player. He's a really good kid. Everybody – didn't we talk about this? If we didn't, I apologize. But we talked about the influence of McDavid and Draisaitl and their contracts on the rest of the young players. You know, Horvat's in that milieu, but he's nowhere near as good, so he doesn't get near the money. But he gets term, he gets good term, and he gets, you know, $30 million. That's really good. But I think what's really opened up a lot of problems around the league, both McDavid and Draisaitl's contracts, those are gigantic deals that everybody's using in terms of measuring sticks.
Once again, Michel Therrien in studio with Tony Marinaro on the Montreal Forum for a full hour between 10 and 11 this morning. You can listen to it at tsn690.ca, Montreal Forum podcast section.
Is he your kind of player, Drouin?
He's a superstar as far as I'm concerned.
Me too. I love him.
Yeah.
Jonathan Drouin's a superstar in the making.
He is.
Michel Therrien.
He's a superstar. Yeah. He's got a chance to be a superstar. He's never scored more than 25 goals in any one season. So this is the year he's going to have to do that to get superstar status. See, that's the thing. It's one thing to say you're a superstar. It's another thing to do it. Now, again, I spent a lot of time with Jonathan 2 days ago. I think he's got a chance to be a superstar. I do. Said it at the time. But is he the final piece to a puzzle? I don't, at this point, no. He's never scored more than 25 goals in any one year in the NHL. Come on.
Well, I don't know what people...
You guys rip Max Pacioretty, not you, Mitch, but the media that are listening to this, you guys shred Max Pacioretty. You rip him apart. Drouin hasn't scored anywhere near as many goals as Pacioretty.
He's played 160 games.
I'm just telling you, though. I mean, you guys, the media shredded Max Pacioretty. The guy was scoring close to 40 goals a year.
He scored 0 in 6 games in the playoffs.
I understand. How many? Hold on a second. Hold it. I have one question for you. It's just a simple question.
Yeah.
How many playoff games did Jonathan Drouin play last year?
Well, what does that have to do with?
He played zero.
They're playing on the same team.
The same amount of goals as Pacioretty. So what you're telling me is, this is not a knock on Jonathan Drouin, but if a guy really is a superstar, when you got him. And you lose a superstar like Stamkos, how come he didn't overcome the loss of the other superstar?
I don't think most people would say that Jonathan Drouin is a superstar at this moment.
That's my point. That's what I'm trying to tell you. He's not. He's a very good player. So now, have we dropped the stand? I just want to know so I get this going forward for the rest of our shows. Anybody that scores less than 25 goals in any one season has a chance to be a superstar. Is that correct? Is that just so I'm clear?
Well, you and I are from an era where 20 goals used to mean something, and then it was, and now it's 20-goal season is kind of meaningful again. It's not superstar status, but it's kind of meaningful. It means more. 20-goal season today means more than it did 8-10 years ago, unfortunately. That's not superstar status, but if Jonathan Drouin can move up to, what did he score, 50-odd points last year for Tampa? If he can have a 70-point season this year, if he's the number one center, which apparently the plan is.
If he has a 70-point season, that would be phenomenal.
Oh, that's a superstar in the making, perhaps, if he has a 70-point season.
Yes, absolutely agree with that. Totally agree with that.
So let me try to get this straight. Do you think the criticism of Max Pacioretty after they lost in the playoffs last season was unwarranted, even though he didn't score?
Totally unwarranted. Totally unwarranted. They shredded this kid. You shredded him.
Well, I don't know about the word shredded, but I think when your best player in a low scoring series doesn't score once, he deserves some criticism.
So here's a question I have for you. How much help did he have down the middle?
Well, how did he score 30-odd goals? Alexander Radulov was the same guy, and he managed to score in the playoffs. He didn't have the same center.
That's a fair one. That's more than fair. That's very fair. I'll cede to that. But I just didn't like, you know, saying, oh, he's playing on the periphery. He doesn't want to play hard. He's not motivated to stay here. He's not a true leader. Okay. Trade him then. See what
I got. Tons of respect for that guy. Tons of respect for Patch. He cares about the team. He cares about his teammates. He's doing a lot of really good thing for the city. He's tried to raise money with golf tournament. And on the ice, you know what? He's close to score 40 goals almost his last 5 years. You know, so and you're looking this performance on the ice. It's been there. This is a relationship that we grow over the years. you know, and I got tons of respect for Patch.
Michel Therrien earlier
guy,
today.
There's a guy that was in the room with him every day. So I'm just, now, I go back a lot further with Pacioretty than Michel Therrien does, far further, for when he played at Taft for the Rhinos, okay? That's how far back I know him from. And let me just tell you, he has got character, he is a leader, he is an honorable man, and what happened to him last spring, that was not merited at all, at all. That was wrong what happened with the media there, totally wrong.
Pierre, in 38 playoff games, Max Pacioretty has 10 goals. Now, maybe over the next 38, he scores 20. We don't know, but at through basically a half season in the NHL in the playoffs, I like to put a little more stock in the playoffs in the regular season. He scored 10 goals. He needs to do more. I'm not shredding him.
No, you're not. You're not at all. In fact, the way you phrased that was perfect. So I'll just give you another example of that kind of scouting perspective. The Boston Bruins in 2006 traded away the MVP of the National Hockey League because they said Joe Thornton could never win for them. That's the logic they used. Did they ever bother to look at maybe the team around him wasn't very good?
Well, that was obviously a terrible trade. But you could figure that one out the day it was made.
Do you want me to tell you the players they got for him?
Yeah, I know Marco Sturm was one of them.
Wayne Primeau, Marco Sturm, and Brad Stewart for the MVP and the leading scorer of the National Hockey League in the same year. Are you kidding me? One guy's still playing. He happens to be playing for the team that didn't draft him. The other guys have not played in a very long time.
In the history of the NHL, Joe Thornton is the only MVP to have been traded in the middle of a season.
That was a brilliant trade. And it was all because people said he can't deliver in the playoffs. No, he can deliver in the playoffs. The team around him stinks. So everybody loads up on him.
All right.
You don't like that, but it's a fact.
No, I like that. I like that. I just know going forward, when the Canadiens are in the playoffs, you think there's a chance they won't get in. I believe they will get in. Max Pacioretty is going to have to deliver in the playoffs or the criticism will grow. That's reality. That's sports. It's a result-oriented business. Okay. Carey Price cannot give up a bad goal the way that he did in Game 6 in New York. People look at that. Right?
They do, for sure. You know, it's funny. I was talking to a really smart hockey person the other day, and we're talking about goaltenders. And I said, you know what? I guess I come from a different era. Ken Dryden had to be great. You know why? Because he didn't have to have a lot of shots to influence a game. He just had to be good on two or three a night because he didn't face very much more than 20 a game. But he had to be good two or three times a game. And if he wasn't, there was a chance the team could lose. That's amazing pressure. That guy was really good. I like the Dryden standard for goalies, just like Brodeur. Brodeur was the same in New Jersey. When they were winning, like there wasn't a lot of room for error because of the style that they played. They didn't score a lot. So I don't know. I mean, to me, the big thing is that everybody's got to pull the rope in the same direction. And if you think the Canadiens are a home ice team, we'll see. I don't think they are. I do think they have a legitimate chance to be one of the bottom two teams in the Eastern Conference for a playoff spot. I really believe that.
So
but
here's
I don't believe them to be a home ice team, no.
All right. Well, that's okay. But here, let's finish up with our Morellas question of the day that we start every show with. Who ends up with more points in the Atlantic Division this season, the Toronto Maple Leafs or the Montreal Canadiens?
Toronto.
There you go, without hesitating. Oh, they're going to love you all year here in Montreal, Pierre.
I didn't draft Austin Murphy. Toronto did. I didn't draft Mitch
Matthews.
Marner. Toronto did.
Austin Matthews.
What did I say?
You said Austin Murphy.
Oh, Austin Matthews. I apologize.
That's all right.
Austin Murphy, great writer for Sports Illustrated.
I know.
I didn't draft William Nylander. They did. I mean, you keep looking. Connor Brown. They have. The only way...
Save it. Pierre, you got to save some of this for Monday.
No, it's okay. There's going to be a lot more over the weekend. A lot of stuff happening.
Oh, yeah?
You know, well, you never know. Here's the one thing, Mitch. This is if Freddie Anderson doesn't produce with the consistency that he showed in Anaheim, if he plays the same way this year as he did last year, that's going to be a problem for Toronto. He's got to be way more consistent, far more consistent.
Have a terrific weekend, Pierre.
Oh, boy. You're cutting me off.
We've gone like 7 minutes beyond what we normally do.
I know, but the only
I'm
big
not cutting you off.
The Alouettes. The only big story you have coming up are the Alouettes tonight.
Well, and the defending Super Bowl champs lost horribly last night.
They were terrible. Hey, by the way, Rod, I know you watch the NFL like I do. That was not good at all. But that just shows you, opening night, celebrating the Super Bowls, too much pomp and circumstance. The guys lost their way after the first touchdown. They lost their way.
Well, that defense didn't respect Alex Smith and Kansas City's offense.
Not at all. Not even close. Totally agree.
Pierre, we got to get help from the people who sponsor you, and they've been doing it every day for like a decade.
I know. I apologize. I love you to death. Have a great weekend, everybody. See you later.